This meeting is the Joint House and Senate Administrative Regulatory Review Committee. It is March 21st at 1 o'clock. The members who are present are Vice Chair Senator Geisel, Senator Stevens, and myself, Chair Reinbold, and we will be, I believe Senator French and Tarr are on their way. At this time, if you please silence your cell phones, that would be really, really appreciated. I don't have you bring donuts, but I have you bring homemade cookies or fruit. So I really, really appreciate you guys complying with that. The Alaska Administrative Code has the force of law. Often the public is not aware of this or the process until it has an impact on their business or on their profession or in their life. So our goal for this committee will be to improve the process by providing more transparent information to the public and the communities. For some Alaskans, the process is a mystery, so all of us can benefit from more information. Today, we have an overview of the steps of the regulation process from the Department of Law. We also have a testimony from Terry Lauterbach. She's the regulations counsel for the committee and the legislature. She's provided us with information and statistics on how many regulation packages are put together and being proposed as a result of the reviews. So our first agenda item today is a presentation by the Department of Law. So if we could please invite Deb Baer and Steve Weaver up.
Good afternoon, Chair.
My name is Deborah Baer, and I'm employed by the Department of Law as the state's regulations attorney. I've been in this position for many years, and I, when I normally give this class, it is in approximately an hour and a half to 2 hours on how the regulations process goes. So I'm going to do, I was asked to do a very abbreviated version, so if you would like me to come to your offices later and give you the expanded version or talk to your staff, I'm more than happy to do that at your convenience. I wanted to refer you to some exhibits that were in the packet I saw that was out there. So about halfway through, you'll see a flowchart, steps in the regulation process, and following it is the statutory definition of regulation. Okay. So those are the two that I will be working with, so it may be easier for you even to rip them out because they'll be the only two I'll be working with. The first question I get...
Tell us again where they are and what they are. Steps, you're saying?
It looks like a flow chart. It says steps in the regulation process.
Right.
Okay, and then there's following it or close by is the statutory definition of regulation. Okay, we're all on the same wavelength. The first question I get from people is what is a regulation? Because people are really confused, especially they don't realize that many regulations come out directly from the courts. We have no choice. We have to do a regulation. It's not that agencies are sitting around deciding, well, I have nothing to do this afternoon, I'll do regulations. So where do we get a definition of what's a regulation? The legislature has adopted a statutory definition of regulation. It's in the Administrative Procedures Act, which I follow when I'm reviewing regulations an advising agency. And I want to let you know we have probably one of the broadest definitions of a regulation in the nation. There's probably maybe six or seven. It's very, very broad. And I'll explain why that's probably a good thing for consumers. But it does make a lot of things have to go through the process. One of the things, when it looks at what's a regulation, it's every rule, regulation, order, or standard of general application. What does that mean in real life? If a state agency is using a standard, say for a grant program, and it's not in statute, they have to have it in regulation or someplace so that the public will know what it is, have a right to comment on it, and then know that's what's going to be applied in their case when we're awarding grants. So it's something that's going to be generally used. That's the key. The second standard, if you look, I'm going to be doing 1, 2, 3, and 4 on my exhibit one. It's by a state agency. So if you're talking to like municipality of Anchorage, they or talking to another state, this is only the state of Alaska's definition of what is a regulation. So in other states, you may find something doesn't have to be a regulation that doesn't answer the question in the state of Alaska. In the municipality of Anchorage, they do ordinances. They don't do state regulations. The next part that the regulation definition answers is what's the goal of a regulation? And that's my number three over there. The goal of a regulation is to implement or specific implement, interpret, or make specific the law being enforced or administered by it. What is the key to that, me as an attorney, as I'm advising people? That I have to find a state statute that the legislature wanted the state agency to interpret or implement. And I have had programs where they've gone a period of time developing regulations. There's no state statute on the books, so I have to tell them to go back to the legislature. There's nothing wrong with what they want to do. They just started with the wrong form. The form is to go to the legislature, ask for authorization to be in the program, and then I'll help you with the regulations to develop it. So that's number three over there. So it's broad. It's a broad standard. It's the standard implemented by a state agency to implement or make specific a law being enforced or administered by that state agency. The legislature was very, very clear to, if there are any gray areas on here, our manuals or regulation, our interpretive bulletins regulation. The legislature gave the state agencies very clear guidance that when in doubt, it is a regulation. And how do I reach that conclusion? You go, number four, whether regulation, regardless of what a state agency calls it, it's whether it affects the public or is used by the state agency in dealing with the public. So my grant standard application, if I'm going to use it to say who gets a grant and who doesn't get a grant, and it's not in statute, I don't care what I call it. If it's a general standard of general application, it's got to be in a regulation or it's got to be in the statute. Again, the legislature at number five said regulation includes manuals, so the agency cannot say, well, it's in my manual, I don't have to go through the regulation process. That doesn't answer the question. If it's not in statute and it's a standard, they have to go through the regulation process. So as you can see when looking at it, a lot of things need to be in a regulation, an awful lot of things do. And then number six is just very, very specific. You can't use a different word to avoid or circumvent this chapter. So it's very specific. The legislature, when in doubt, we do a regulation. And that's an advantage to the public because the public gets an opportunity to comment and notice of it before their rights are affected. If somebody just does a manual in their office, the public doesn't necessarily have notice of it or a right to comment beforehand. Okay, number seven, the only exception to this list of definitions is internal management of a state agency. And I describe that when I'm teaching people as if I were Commissioner of Health and Social Services and I had a policy, when a child is removed from the home, I want to see a copy of that form in the child's file, a copy at your supervisor, and a copy on my desk. That's an internal management thing. That does not need the standards for pulling a child out of a home either have to be in statute or regulation. So that's, but it is quite broad, varies from state to state. So that's the main key on why it's important to understand. So when the legislature adopts policies, like I can see possibly out of this budgetary process, cost containment standards are going to need to be developed. The legislature will appropriate less money for a program. I will intend work with the state agencies to do regulations to implement that, to say, well, now we're giving 10% less grants, or how we're going to implement those cost containment procedures. So it's a step that needs to be considered when we're adopting regulations. Okay, I indicated about the protection to the public through the regulation process, and let me go through how I reached that conclusion. We're going to go through the steps in the regulation process. Okay, and it's done in a flowchart in the order of which a state agency should be looking at it and considering it. And if you get back to your office and you want to think more about it, this is right out of the drafting manual that I believe the staff to the committee gave to you. It's also on the internet. So if you get somebody from the public calling you and wanting to know what we use and the standards, This manual is on the Department of Law's website. It's downloadable. Anybody can have it. It's a public document. And you'll notice on, like, this is on page 8. On page 9 of the manual, I go through and explain, like, block 1, planning, decision-making, and what do I mean by block 1. And that's in the detailed blue manual that you have in front of you. So there's each step there has their own description in the manual, and it follows it right after, not page 9, 10, whatever. Okay, I want to go over very quickly, because I know your time is very limited today, what the and this is a legislative process. I haven't invented any of this process or any of the steps. What the legislature was intending for the various processes that are here. The first stage in the process is what I call planning and decision making. If a commissioner called me and said, I'm interested in doing cost containment regulations, I would sit down and suggest to them that we need to look at the federal law, we need to look at the state law on the issue, we need to look what legislative intent and legislative history is on the subject. And then let's decide on what we want to do in this project and the timeline for the project. The state agency can work with the public on developing regulations through workshops. I've done workshops with state agencies. The legislature has authorized a wonderful provision called negotiated rulemaking, so you can have stakeholders sit down and negotiate regulations, and that's fairly new. And that's been successful in our more contentious regulations. And then they can meet with their advisory boards and get information information that way in, to develop the regulations. And as I mentioned, most state agencies, their new projects come from state statutes that you have passed, court decisions where the court has said, well, we need to do a better job defining a term, or new issues that arise in implementing programs under existing statutes and regulations. So that's what happens in Block 1. Block 2, 3, and 4 is where the agency is developing the regulations, the notice, the additional notice, and fiscal note. The goal is agency, because you as the legislature have confirmed, my example, the Commissioner of HESS, to decide cost containment regulation. So the attorney sits down and provides information to them, but the bulk of the work at this stage is done by the state agency. The assistance of the attorneys at this stage depends a lot on access to an attorney, because the attorney may be very busy in trial, or in our occupational licensing boards, there is a cost issue here, because they want to be very careful about that every hour an attorney uses in developing regulations goes into the base fee that someone has to pay a licensee for. So at this stage, the agency develops regulations following the Administrative Procedures Act. Last year, the legislature passed a new statute on brief descriptions in our notices to make sure that the public could easily take a snapshot executive summary as to what the regulation was. I want to alert everybody here that we are doing it, and if you see it on the internet or on a mail out to you, we are actually doing it, and I've hearing good success from it. People are very happy with it. The other thing I wanted to tell you, I don't leave agencies out in the cold. I do training every year for all state agencies, and anyone can come to my training that's going to be developing these regulations. Okay, we're now on to Block 5, and that is the publication stage. Okay, so I've drafted my regulations. We're required now to let the public know that we're actually going to go forward with it and give an indication to the public. How do we do this? The legislature has told us we have to put it in a newspaper of general circulation, which we do. We put it on the Alaska Online Public Notice System. That's the electronic newspaper for the executive branch, where they're all posted. There, we do have a major mailing list for projects. And if you have a constituent, say, is very concerned about food code regulations, they can get on the mailing list at the Department of Environmental Conservation and ask to be on there, and they will get copies of any regulation that is done on food code, for example. Okay, distribution to legislators. I'm sure you're getting email copies of all of that. And also at this, what I call this early stage, we send it to the Legislative Affairs Agency, the Regulation Review Committee, and it starts what I call the early warning legal review process. And Terry Lauterbach from Legislative Legal will explain that in more detail. But it's a wonderful thing where she gets an opportunity early on to advise you and legislator and the people in the statute, legislative committees, what legal issues are may be in these regulations. All right, so then we go on to I'm on block number 5. I've done my public notice. I've let the public know that we're going to go forward to it. What's the goal of a public notice? The goal of the public notice is to get public comment. I describe the regulatory process very similar to passing a bill in the legislature. We want people to come to your hearings, just like you want people to come to your legislative hearings. We want people to come and offer comments. I tell when I'm speaking to private groups, I say, please give us suggestions. If you don't like something, tell us how to change it. It doesn't do any good to just come in and say, this regulation doesn't work. Tell us how to fix it. We want to make sure that the regulation works for the regulated community. So that's what happens in the public comment period. Written comments are seriously considered by the adopting agency. Oral comments, we try to use the LIO, your Legislative Information Systems, in the off-season. It's a little hard to do it during the legislative season because you're so busy with it. But in the off-season, it's a valuable resource, especially for regulations that are going to be held in going to affect in the rural areas of Alaska. I'm now on to block number 7. Number 7 deals with the adoption of the regulations for a commissioner. The commissioner has a duty to seriously consider all the comments. Commissioner adopts in the commissioner's office and then lets the public know about the adoption. Boards and commissions, the legislature has decided that adoptions must be done in a public meeting, and it's publicly noticed, and it is by the people that you confirmed on those boards and commissions. So like the Board of Education, they have to meet in a public meeting, and then they adopt and take a vote that the public can see what how people voted. And that's what's happening in Block 7. At, I have 2 points where people get a lot of confused in Block 7 is there's existing statutes on the books right now that require state agencies to pay special attention to the cost of private parties while they're considering comments. That's on the statutes on the books right now, and I can assure you the agencies do that. The second thing that the statutes right now require is for the Department of Environmental Conservation, when they're doing pollution control standards, they're supposed to give special alternatives to alternative practical means to accomplish the goal. The English description of this, there was a legislator that was very concerned that possibly DEC was requiring gold faucets when they could do stainless steel or something. I don't remember the exact example, but it was like that. If there's a better way to do it, that's you can reach the same goal and it's cost, and if there's another alternative, please consider it and evaluate it. Those are statutes on the books right now, and they are being followed. Okay, on block number 8 is where the project is submitted to the Department of Law for legal review. We're very fortunate in the state of Alaska that the Department of Law reviews regulations for legal sufficiency before they go on the books. Frankly, that's not required in every state. So some regulations could be adopted by a board, and I'll use the Board of Nursing, because and there's not a lawyer sitting on the Board of Nursing. And so the Board of Nursing can do their very best job doing an appropriate regulation for their regulated population, but it could have a legal problem. If you don't have the Department of Law looking at them, it would go right on the books, and the person who had a problem with it would have to go to court for it. We are very fortunate in Alaska where the Department of Law looks at it, and nothing goes off my desk without a legal opinion saying that it meets the standards, meets the statutory requirements. That's very different than the review that that Terry Lauterbach does very early on. She does it before the Department of Law does its final legal review. It's the early warning, catching issues, and the goal why the legislature asked for it to be done early on is because legislators, to make the most affection in public policy, in regulations, you want to do it during the public comment period, and people can do something about it. So her memos come out, and they say, well, there's a problem here or something there. That's great. Then the committee can hold an oversight hearing. They can go to the board meeting and say something else needs to be done. And I can assure you the Department of Law seriously looks at those memos when we do our final legal review. But it's the review's slightly different, and people get really confused about that. Okay, also at this Block 8, you'll see the bottom line there, Governor's Office conducts its review. The legislature gave a provision in the Administrative Procedures Act that allows the governor to do a review of certain regulations for just basically two statutory standards. One is for faithful execution of the law, and the second one is basically to respond or to review for comments by the Regulation Review Committee. And the governor's office has the ability to delegate to the lieutenant governors to do that. Governors that I have worked with, some have delegated, some have not. This governor has chosen not to delegate, and he has his own staff doing it. And they review for those two standards, and they speak with, I know they have meetings with commissioners on the regulations and say, what are they doing and what's going on with them? This provision for reviewing regulations applies to non-board regulations. It's, and the reason why is because boards meet infrequently, and there would be an additional cost to have them meet more frequently. But that's at least my understanding of why the legislature did it that way. There's more history to that if we want to go into that at some point. Okay, so it goes to the Department of Law. I peel off a copy for the governor's office to do its legal review. It goes, policy review. It goes over to block number 9, which is our substantive attorneys review them. I am, I'll call myself an air traffic controller. I do for all regulations all over the state. I am not an expert in cost containment and Medicaid. I am not an expert in DOT requirements for federal financing. We have people who do that, and they look at it first. They tell me it meets the substantive requirements, and then it comes up to me and my staff, and then we look. And my job is to basically make sure all state regulations look the same. We're using shall and may the same way, and making sure that if I get a set of regulations that don't meet the standards, I will go back and talk to the agency attorney, and we will be talking to the commissioner saying, look, this needs to be fixed before it can go on the books. And that's a very powerful consumer protection tool, to have an attorney looking at them and saying, well, it doesn't meet the statutory standard. Okay, then we go on to block number 11, and that is, unless returned by the governor, the lieutenant governor files the approved regulations. So I sign an approval memo. I send it over to the lieutenant governor's office for filing. Unless the lieutenant governor's office has noticed that the governor wishes to exercise their prerogative under this standard to return it back to the state agency, they are filed. Regulations typically take effect 30 days after filing. They can take longer than that if... And there's good reason sometimes why it should be take effect after that time period. I can go over that a little bit. The Lieutenant Governor's Office also has a role of sending the filed regulations to your committee for your staff to review, and then also publish them and send them to the publisher to work with on the Alaska Administrative Code. State agencies also have a duty under Block 12 to notify the public the regulations have been adopted, and they are posting summaries on the Alaska Online Public Notice System. I think that's one of the things, if you have a constituent that's very frustrated that they don't know what's going on in regs, they need to sign up for the Online Public Notice System, and they need to get on people's mailing lists. It's really critical, because that's where this information will help them in making sure that they interface, because a lot of people don't know at what point can they make the most decision in the process. Let's see if there's anything else I want to mention. I just want to mention, too, the legislature, people get confused, because the legislature can hold an oversight hearing on any regulation at any point. It doesn't have to be a pending regulation. If they wanted to hold a regulation on, I don't know, Medicaid cost containment or something, and have the commissioner come in and say, what are you doing now under regulations? You can do that. If there's a pending regulation out there, you can have a hearing on that. It's a check and balance our constitutional framers, because you are the ones setting out the parameters through the statutes. We are implementing your statutes. What are the checks? You can come in and do oversight over us. And also, every regulation is subject to review by the court system. And the court system, I'll tell you, they use independent judgment on a lot of on the regulations. And that gives you the second look as well. Another thing that people don't realize is we have a petitioning procedure in the Administrative Procedures Act. And it's kind of similar to initiatives. So if you find somebody coming in your office and saying, you know, they aren't really listening to me, or I think there is a petition process in the Administrative Procedures Act where they can bring their ideas directly to the board or the department, and the board or department has a duty to look at it. They don't have a duty to adopt it, because they may not be appropriate, but they have a duty to at least consider it. That's all I wanted to add, and if you have any questions, and I said this is the short version. I certainly can do the long version in your office.
Well, I'll go ahead. I'll start with the first question. Between box 6 and 7, where you take public comment, and then where the agency adopts the regulation, if I understand the system correctly, agencies can make important changes that have the force of law without additional public comment. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And that's probably to prevent endless public comment, I would guess. However, can you tell me the extent that these changes before they're out of bound, or if there's a line, a line in the sand where the agency, you know, has to stop and say, wait, that's too big, we've got to start the public process all over again?
Sure. And I'm Deborah Barron, regulations attorney. I always tell people when I'm teaching this area is, look at your public notice. What did you tell the public you were going to do, and is the public going to be surprised? And if the public's going to be surprised, you probably should go out again. You don't necessarily, there isn't always that you have to legally go out, but there's always, you can get good feedback. I'll tell you, I am delighted when I hold a hearing and private businesses have paid for their attorneys to come in and tell me how to approve the regulations, or paid for their engineers to look at the regulations and say, this is a suggestion, this is a suggestion. So they're always free to go out. I look first at the notice to see if they have to go out, and one of the things I look at it was the public have fair notice that was going to be considered within it. If the APA required every time we made a change that we had to go out, every time somebody came up with a good idea in a public comment, we'd have to go out again for a public comment. Most regulations have some deadline at the end people want, like, for example, cost containment regulations. The legislature is going to want the departments to balance their budgets pretty quickly. So if we go out in July and August and say, we're going to do cost containment, and somebody comes in, on one of the physicians comes in and says, well, that really won't work for the small physician's office. Do this differently. We do it differently. We decide to do it differently. We'd have to go out for another round of public comments. And then if there was someone else that had a very good idea, we'd have to go out for another round of public comments. So the overall delay is, I think, difficult. Plus, you always remember the legislature has the ultimate say over any regulation. If you don't like a regulation, pass a bill. And the bill, the statute, always trumps the regulation. There's no question there. And oversight hearings, I can tell you, the commissioners seriously think, when we've come to oversight hearings, they seriously listen to everything that everybody offers on them. So I hope that's been helpful.
Well, I think it's been incredibly helpful. I'm not sure if anyone else has questions right now, but I would definitely like to figure out from the committee if there's any in particular hearings like cost containment on Medicaid, you know, that align with the goals that we're trying to achieve. If we would like to try, and we don't necessarily have to talk this meeting, but I just want to open up your minds to be considering if we want to do that in the near future, as you speak with your commissioners, as you look at your policy goals that you have, if we want to hold some hearings possibly throughout the state, energy issues or anything like that, so we can start planning ahead, so we can make this, you know, a better place to do business, absolutely meet. Some of the policy concerns that the governor's has, and just make it a better place to do business. The first thing I did was when I started going out and figuring out what the community want, they said regulations are killing them. Mm-hmm. They said that they can't grow, that it's just wearing them down, and they just didn't understand why there needed to be so many. So I certainly am interested in having hearings throughout the state, whether small or big, just to listen to the needs around the state where regulations are burdening our communities.
Thank you.
Senator Stevens.
I just had a question about the petitioning procedure. Could you help me understand that a little bit more? And is that a common thing, a seldom used thing? And if you have an example in education, I'd appreciate hearing that.
Yeah. The petitioning procedure is in the Administrative Procedures Act. So if you're talking to somebody from the public, there are standards that need to be in there, like you have to say your reason why you have it, what kind of language you want. And then the agency has a short time period, I think it's 30 days, I'd have to look at it, to essentially act on it, which is whether to hold it on for hearing. In a case, I know you're very interested, Senator, in education, the State Board of Education doesn't meet every 30 days. We have Department of Law said it's the next meeting that you have to think about it, because we don't want to cause extra costs as a result of it. But it's rarely done. I mean, I've been doing this work for many, many years, and I think I've seen less than a handful, maybe 10, 12. Mm-hmm. And it.
10 to 12 in how many years?
I'm going to give away my age here, but probably over 20.
20 years. Thank you.
Thank you. We really, really appreciate your testimony. I don't know if there's any further questions from the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deb. That was very, very informative. With that said, we're going to go ahead and invite Terry Lauterbach up. And Terry, if you would please, your name, your affiliation, that would be really, really terrific.
Thank you, Chair. I am Terry Lauterbach, one of many legislative counsel across the street working for the legislature from LAA Legal. This is my 30th anniversary of starting to work here.
Congratulations.
So it's been great.
Amazing.
In that packet, you have a March 14th memo from me. I'm assuming you all had a chance to look at it, and I am open to questions. In general, the review process that was established in AS 2420105 was established in 2004, so it's been roughly 9 years. And I was there at the start. There's been another attorney who did a few years worth of it, and now I'm back doing it again. I do not have the authority to say anything about the policy within a regulation. So if you pass a law that says the board or the commission or the department shall adopt regulations to implement this section, well, that's all the farther you go. That's all the farther I can go. They've got broad authority, and I'm not going to be able to find much inconsistency or lack of statutory authority. Sometimes there's a matter of legislative intent. If the statute's not clear enough, that kind of issue can come up. And let me emphasize that when I do issue a memo, I'm only saying there's a possible legal problem. Legal minds can differ, even on our Supreme Court. So certainly between the Department of Law and me, even within our own office, legal minds can differ. So mostly my memos are saying, hey, this is a legal issue you might want to look at. It could be that the statutory language isn't very clear, or the agency went through 5 different committees doing hearings when the legislation was being enacted or considered. They heard different kinds of intent from different chairs or different members of committees. They heard different kinds of intent from legislators who voted on the floor for or against a bill. And they're kind of stuck trying to meet all those intents. But I am looking at the statute as it was passed. And I'm not privy to all those committee hearings that the agency might have been sitting at. I'm looking at the exact language that the legislature passed. And so sometimes an agency will come up with regulations that, hey, I promised the chair that we'd really look at this issue, but the statute as passed doesn't really address it. So some of the memos come out of that kind of situation. I want to emphasize that there's always been good faith efforts by the agencies to discuss any of these issues with me. We have a lively and professional email consultation during this review process, and they're always prompt and courteous with their answers. Sometimes they talk me out of my initial response to some regulations. Like Debbie, I'm sort of an air traffic controller. I'm not professionally adept at, don't have the expertise for oil and gas taxes, for environmental conservation, water quality standards. You know, some of the details of regs are very technical. They're filling in the blanks that the legislature didn't want to or couldn't, because they're technical, get into. And again, it's probably getting into policy things, what particular standard is chosen. And so as long as the legislature gave the authority to the department to establish water quality standards, that's about as far as my review goes. The technical issue of where the standard is set is a policy choice. But the agencies have always been very helpful in letting me understand where their regulations came from and why they think they have authority if I initially question that. Now, there are some statistics in this memo about the last 3 bienniums. It's pretty consistently 200 to 240 packets. It's evenly split over the 2 calendar years of the bienniums. That's not in the memo. As Debbie mentioned, there's many factors other than state legislation that affect the regulations. It has very little to do with whether it's the first or second session of the legislature. There's changes in federal law. There's constant changes in program standards as different issues come up. And there are court decisions. And as you'll see in the second paragraph on the second page, only 1/5 or so of proposed regulations implement new state legislation. So there's a lot of other factors involved, and that's probably why it's very consistent from year to year how many packets of regulations there are.
I have a quick question, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Okay, so let's say you that an agency or, you know, a business has a problem with a regulation. Tell me the process that they would go through to deal with that situation.
A state agency?
Right.
Or a private sector business.
Either.
Those are 2 different.
Right. They're 2 totally different.
They have a problem with an existing regulation?
Existing regulation.
Well, Debbie, I think, touched on some of that, the petition process, the contacting their legislators, asking them to hold a hearing, or asking them to introduce a bill that would change that regulation. Am I understanding your question?
Well, basically, in your memo, you basically said that there's you communicate with the different agencies, and that if there's you've been able to avoid litigation because of the procedures that you have in place. And we just want to know, with who do you communicate with when you have a question about a regulation? What actions do they take or not take regarding the communication?
Okay, thank you. I understand the question better now. The review process that I am under is 242105. The statute only allows me to consult the state agencies that are proposing the regulation. This is a confidential process of review. It does not involve the public. And the candid nature of the email exchange I have with agencies depends on that confidentiality. The 242105 would have to be rewritten to have any other kind of input involved. I often also consult attorneys in LAA, for instance, on oil and gas tax regulations. I would probably ask Don Bullock and Emily Nauman if they had any reactions, especially if they drafted the original bill. But this is not a public process. The public comment period that Deborah Baer was telling you about is where the public, businesses, or other agencies have their input. Not, I am just advising the legislature.
Okay. And you know what? I forgot to recognize Representative Tarr. She came in shortly after the meeting started. I apologize for that. And then Senator Stevens?
Just a question, Terry. I've always found the legislative intent that letters, at least letters, add to a piece of legislation pretty interesting. And I just wondered how that fit in with what you do. Because often it seems a little confusing, but we're trying to explain what we meant when we passed a particular bill. Does that have take precedence over the actual statute itself or the legislation? Does legislative intent, is it less important? Is it more important? Or how do you fit that into your analysis?
Thank you. First of all, it depends on what kind of legislative intent you're talking about. Sometimes a committee will pass along a letter of intent with its committee substitute. Sometimes there'll actually be an intent section in the bill that passes. Sometimes there'll be a letter of intent from the floor. So those all have different levels of importance or usefulness, because if that committee substitute is not the one that's adopted, then that intent letter really doesn't matter either, unless that same provision that they might specify stays in the final bill as adopted. To directly answer part of your question, it's always going to be the statute that takes precedence, no matter what the letter of intent said. So if you don't get the statute, clear enough, nothing in the letter of intent will override what's in the statute. Okay. It will help if there's some vagueness that you left in the statute on purpose. It will help, but it won't be determinative. If you've given broad authority to the agency to adopt regulations, a letter of intent from a committee isn't going to be very binding. They'll look at it, they'll certainly consider it, but they are stuck with what the law actually says too, and with how it finally passed, not how a particular chair or a particular sponsor statement might have read. There's so much that happens during the legislative process. They have to go with the law as it's passed.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, and then the last section that we're dealing with today is improvements. How can we improve the regulatory process and identify issues in our community? And as you know, I've introduced House Bill 140, and it basically just the agency has to not only recognize the impacts of the regulations on their own agency, but it also has to look at the impacts to other agencies in the private sector and municipalities. And we're not going to discuss that bill today. But we're basically looking for more transparency, more openness in the process. And in Indiana, so the last part of this is in Indiana in 2012, they passed Senate Bill 311, which substantially rewrote their existing regulatory cost-benefit analysis law. So in your packet, you'll have this law. and with accompanying fiscal note from Indiana. And a few relevant excerpts have been made in red. So the highlights are what I see as universal principles of good regulation policy. For example, an assessment of the rule's effect on Indiana business. So when a regulation is passed, they have to look at the effect of what's going on in Indiana. So the provision was already in law in Indiana in the reform in 2005. So are you guys all following me where it says the OMB shall provide the cost-benefit analysis? Okay, so basically what it did is the OMB shall make the cost-benefit analysis and other related public documents available to interested parties, regulated persons, the nonprofit corporations whose members may affect by proposed rule at least 30 days before presenting the cost-benefit analysis to the governor and the administrative rules oversight to the committee under subsection A. This gives the public a chance to read and respond to the cost-benefit analysis. So this bill also required the OMB to submit a cost-benefit analysis to the governor and to the Administrative Rules Oversight Committee not later than 6 months after the third anniversary of the rule's effective date. This is like a look-back provision. So again, Alaska, we may want to consider doing that here. And finally, when I looked at this bill, it was estimated that the bill's requirements can be accompanied with existing resources. So while there may be costs, the fiscal note people in Indiana estimated that it could be done within the resources of their OMB. So these principles, paying careful attention to the cost of businesses and the cost-benefits analysis, transparency, and the opportunity for the public to comment on the costs and benefits are all things that this committee may want to consider looking at in Alaska. So I'm not sure if anybody on the committee has questions or comments in regards to that, but at a further date, that's another thing I'd like to be open to discussing if we want to be able to have a more open and transparent process and really look at the impacts of regulations on the community to ensure that we are being, you know, healthy place to do business and to work in the state.
Well, I'd like to ask Ms. Lauterbach's comments on this, her thoughts.
Well, Senator Giesel, through the chair, those are totally policy-oriented considerations that I have no opinion about. I know that some of what the cost-benefit analysis you're asking for, the upfront one, is supposed to happen during the public comment period. Those kinds of issues are supposed to be brought up by the public then. As for the look back, that would be new as far as I know.
Okay. All right. Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay, so to future date, you'll be notified ahead of time. But the things, like I stated earlier, is, you know, do we want to have a more open and more transparent? Do we want to implement cost-benefit analyses? When do we want to meet in the interim? Are there places that we want to do public hearing on policy issues or regulatory issues that are impacting our communities? So you will be hearing from us in email, and we will be asking for feedback to see if anyone on this committee would like to have oversight hearing. Yes, Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in reviewing some of the regulations that have come out during the legislative session, there are a couple that I have been contacted about that may be of interest to the public, you know, if you were interested in having a public hearing. So I don't know if I should bring those up now or talk to you.
Well, go ahead and mention it. We're not going to see any details today, but just a brief concept would be okay.
I know. Sure. One set of regulations that came out has to do with pesticide applications and eliminating the public process associated with that before pesticides can be used on public lands, and just had a number of constituents call about that. It's been a little bit of a high profile issue, and so I think there's some concern that, you know, this removes the public from that process. And then there were some Department of Education regulations related to boarding schools that I had been contacted about. So just a couple, and I was, in understanding the role of this committee, had asked some of the more senior members, and people said, oh, maybe bring that to the chair's attention because you could have hearings about the implementation of those regulations and an opportunity to review them.
Okay. Well, that sounds very good. If the committee wouldn't mind starting to think, I know we have a very busy session the next 3 weeks. We're not going to be holding any meetings the next 3 weeks just so we can close out. But by May 15th, we definitely want any ideas of opportunity, any hearings that you would like to have, any issues such as the pesticide. If we could get that all lined out, you can send me a draft. I don't want to put any more pressure on anybody between now and April 15th. But if we could, I would like to have a meeting right around the middle of May. Or early May, we'll be dealing with you through my committee aid, and also if you could by that time, any key policy topics, any hearings in your community, that would be great. I know that there's been interest in our community wanting to analyze some of the regulations that are impacting some of our businesses in the community. So that'll be a topic that I bring up. But if we do that by May 15th, that would be absolutely terrific. I don't know if there's any other questions for Deb or Terry, but I definitely got an education, so thank both of you. You've been a resource to me, and I have been very, very appreciative of you being very close and being willing to communicate and also being willing to present today. So thank you very, very much. Thank you for all the members for attending. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and gavel up, and you will be hearing from us via email. Thank you very much.